Good morning, this is Brian Trumbore with the Week in Review for Saturday, August 13th. Well, on Monday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped 634 points. On Tuesday, it rose 429. On Wednesday, it dropped 519. On Thursday, it was up 423. And on Friday, it was up 125. My friend Pete commented to me after Monday's market disaster that it reminded him of Lieutenant Frank Drebin's line, I think the late Leslie Nielsen in Police Squad, in telling a crowd that had assembled to watch an exploding fireworks factory, "Move along, nothing to see here." The volatility this week was absurd, and I got a kick out of those who poo-pooed the role of high-frequency traders. Within 5 minutes on Tuesday, for example, about 240 to 245, as I watched the tape, the Dow went from flat to down 200 to down 100 to down 200 and then closed up 400 about 75 minutes later. It was the first time in market history the Dow Jones had 4 days in a week, let alone in a row, where it finished up or down 400 points. Yet, in the end, the market's losses were minimal. For absolutely no good reason, frankly. Neither the Federal Reserve or European Central Bank saved the day with their moves, and we enter the weekend with the situation as dire as ever when it comes to Europe. And I wonder how many times it was said that so-and-so has better credit than the U.S., like on the earnings conference call from my large China holding. Another great report, incidentally, and more inertia in the share price when the question was asked about the access to credit for the company. Not that it needs it with a huge cash position, something frankly I never gave two thoughts to. The CFO quickly said of the two big banks that rated them, it was AAA and AA+. "Oh," said the caller, "so at least in one case you're better than the U.S. Yes, it's both pathetic and scary what's happening these days. Some of what I'll tell you will have you feeling worse than ever. And isn't it funny how I started talking of a 30% crash in the U.S. equity market months ago, though not until 2012, and yet we were seemingly on the verge of that this past week already? Off the market's recent highs, we were off about 20% at one point on Wednesday. For a number of factors, especially regarding Europe, we could easily be right back in the gutter next week as European leaders, including the two who matter most at this point, French President Nicolas Sarkozy and German Chancellor Angela Merkel, get together to come up with a plan to save Europe, one that must somehow be agreeable to their own people, which will take leadership to sell it. That's a tall order for Merkel, who faces an insurrection within her own party over the terms of Greek bailout too, and it's already a fragile coalition she controls, and for Sarkozy, whose popularity remains mired in the 20s. If France and Germany don't agree to save Italy and Spain, if necessary, and help fund an increased European Financial Stability Facility, the gig on the euro is up, plain and simple. It would just be a matter of time, and these days events are moving at light speed, not like in the times of the 30 Years' War. Spain, for example, has a key bond auction on September 1st, and without investor confidence someone is backstopping the country, it will fail. The mechanism must be in place before then, or so it seems. Of course, when it comes to Europe, this was a week where S&P, Moody's, and Fitch rating agencies were all forced to reaffirm France's AAA rating, an issue with the downgrade of the United States by S&P, because there were fears France couldn't bail out its banks should that become necessary, with the banks being hit hard by short sellers, rumor mongers, and truth seekers. Banks such as the country's second largest, Société Générale, SocGen, whose shares cratered over 20% at one point. Then there is the growth story, or lack thereof. Europe needs to grow its way out of its debt issue, and it could if everyone grew at about 4%, even 3%, but today that's a pipe dream. France reported its second quarter GDP was totally flat. Italy's was up a whopping 0.3%, Spain's 0.2%. Germany reported exports for June unexpectedly fell. The Bank of England lowered the UK's growth outlook to just 1.4% for all of 2011, with Governor Mervyn King citing headwinds buffeting the UK economy that are intensifying day by day. French government bonds traded at the highest spread to the German Bund since the introduction of the euro. Not good. And the ECB had to buy up Spanish and Italian paper to get their yields back below the key 6% level. Consider this from a piece by Landon Thomas Jr. of the New York Times. Quote, by one measure, according to a recent report from the Peterson Institute for International Economics, 90 of Europe's biggest banks hold 4.7 trillion euros, $6.7 trillion, in short-term loans that must be repaid over the next 2 years. That burden alone is more than half of the combined gross domestic product of the 17 nations that share the euro currency. Well, turning to the U.S., Standard & Poor's had just issued its downgrade of U.S. debt to AA+, as I went to post my column last week, and so I'll repeat their main statement. The downgrade reflects our opinion that the fiscal consolidation plan the Congress and the administration recently agreed to falls short of what, in our view, would be necessary to stabilize the government's medium-term debt dynamics. S&P added it may lower the long-term rating to AA within the next 2 years. Let me start that over. S&P added it may lower the long-term rating to AA within the next 2 years if spending reductions are lower than agreed to in the debt ceiling deficit reduction plan, interest rates rise, or new fiscal pressures emerge. As the administration attacked S&P over the weekend, claiming that S&P made a $2 trillion error, S&P's David Beers defended the move, saying any talk of an error was simply a smokescreen for the unhappiness about our decision. This is not a catastrophic decline in the U.S.'s credit worthiness. Moody's and Fitch, the other two chief rating agencies, are for now maintaining their AAA for U.S. debt. I thought S&P did the right thing. PIMCO's Bill Gross said it showed Standard & Poor's had some spine. Warren Buffett, on the other hand, said the U.S. merits a quadruple A rating. Mr. Buffett, now 80, could be exhibiting early signs of dementia. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg said S&P hit it on the nose in issuing the AA+. Bloomberg said, it's fair to say we have just gotten a two-month civics lesson in how to talk the economy down, adding that the downgrade was a damning indictment of how bad things really have gotten in Washington. They've done much more to harm the economy over the past 2 months than they've done to help it. President Barack Obama, Monday, 1:52 p.m., as the Dow Jones was down about 430 points in his first official statement following the downgrade, quote, markets will rise and fall, but this is the United States of America. No matter what some agency may say, we've always been and always will be a AAA country. And ultimately, the reason I am so hopeful about our future, the reason I have faith in these United States of America, is because of the American people. It's because of their perseverance and their courage and their willingness to shoulder the burdens we face together as one nation. That was our President Barack Obama. What freaking drivel. What tripe. For its part, China called on the United States to, quote, learn to live within its means. As the largest foreign holder of U.S. federal debt, blamed short-sighted political wrangling in Washington for creating the mess threatening the stability of the global financial system. China, the largest creditor of the world's sole superpower, has every right now to demand the United States to address its structural debt problems and ensure the safety of China's dollar assets, an official commentary said. It continued, if no substantial cuts were made to the U.S. gigantic military expenditure and bloated social welfare cost, the downgrade would prove to be only a prelude to more devastating credit rating cuts, which will further roil the global financial markets all along the way. But what did investors do? They piled into treasuries, of course, because it's not as if there are major inflation issues in the U.S., plus the economy is slowing markedly. And at the same time, there's zero real chance the U.S. would actually default on its debt. So on Tuesday, the Federal Reserve had a regularly scheduled open market committee meeting, and amidst the market turmoil, announced it was going to keep the funds rate, that which it controls, at zero for another 2 years. thus killing savers all over again. The Fed also said in its accompanying statement, the committee currently anticipates that economic conditions, including low rates of resource utilization and a subdued outlook for inflation over the medium run, are likely to warrant exceptionally low levels for the federal funds rate at least through mid-2013. Growth so far this year has been considerably slower than the committee had expected, while inflation has moderated. The problem with the Fed now is they have basically zero policy options if we slide into recession. QE2, 1 year later, proved to be a disaster, unless you liked playing the commodities markets. The short-term wealth effect stimulus did the overall economy zero good, as we all paid more for food and energy. And once we learned that first quarter GDP was revised sharply downward from 1.9% to 0.4%, the real starting point to this current phase of the economic crisis, there's only one conclusion that can be reached. Ben Bernanke's post-crisis policies, post-saving the banking system, 2008-09, have been an abysmal failure. And as for the new super committee of 6 Democrats and 6 Republicans, it must come up with $1.5 trillion in deficit reductions by Thanksgiving, or face a nuclear option that automatically then slashes $1.2 trillion, about half from defense. Looking at a composition of the respective teams, there is zero cause for optimism. Zero that these 12 will reach a compromise. Is it any wonder, then, that in a Reuters Ipsos poll, 73% of Americans believe the country is on the wrong track, with just 21% believing we're headed in the right direction? Who are these 21% anyway? Are they nuts? Republicans can't pat themselves on the back either, as they are found to be at fault over Democrats by a 49-40 margin. A USA Today survey reveals that 66% say taxes should rise on the upper income brackets. A Washington Post poll has 8 in 10 dissatisfied with the way the political system is working. 51% of independents, critical to 2012, are very dissatisfied. 71% called S&P's downgrade of the U.S. fair. So you add it all up, and it's no mystery that consumer confidence is crumbling, according to one report on Friday, to the lowest levels in 30 years. The job outlook sucks. There is a tremendous amount of uncertainty on so many fronts, and thus there is no reason for a consumer, 70% of our economy, to spend willy-nilly unless they believe the world is about to end. What would you do with your last 48, 72 hours anyway? Just thought I'd throw out a dinner table topic for you. Just don't bring it up around the impressionable little ones. Yes, it's happy days all around. And as to the odds of the economy finally tipping back into recession, or formally tipping back into recession, does it really matter? We're going to be stuck in neutral at best for a long time to come, it would seem, and 1 to 2% growth would feel like recession on many fronts. Though it would allow for a decent rally in stocks from time to time. The advances for the Dow Jones on Thursday and Friday were the first back-to-back gains for it since July 6 and 7. Overall, after the major equity indices crashed 6-7% on Monday, stocks climbed back in fits and starts to finish with minimal losses, the fewest of this brutal three-week losing streak, with the Dow losing 1.5% to close at 11,269, the S&P 500 losing 1.7%, and NASDAQ declining 1%. There was some respectable economic news the latter part of the week, which helped as jobless claims came in under 400,000, while July retail sales were up 0.5%. But otherwise, it was largely about the plight of financials, as the bank index cratered 11% on Monday. That's all for this week. I will not have a podcast next Saturday. I'm going to be in Iowa all week. So go to stocksnews.com, click on Week in Review for a heck of a lot more on this past week, and then for next week's commentary. Have a good one. Take care.